dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'll be guiding you through another installment of the War of Ideas with some of the finest practitioners on your side in the business. We'll be starting with Claudia Rosette, a ace investigative reporter, longtime editorial writer and reporter for the Wall Street Journal, now with the Foundation for Defense of Democracy. We'll be getting into a number of issues from her old beat, the United Nations, what is it up to? We'll be talking about the corruption she's uncovered yet again at the UN, Sudan, the Gailani trial, the Israeli withdrawal from another place in the border with Lebanon, all of this and much more with the absolutely indispensable Claudia Rosette in segment two. Segment three, James Carafano, one of the senior national security experts at the Heritage Foundation. I'll be asking him about the mystery missile off the California coast. What was that all about? And what is going on with the Chinese effort to seemingly, quite purposefully, reroute extensive quantities of email traffic, including that of many U.S. government agencies, through its own systems? And did we, in fact, see a terrible compromise of national security in the process? And what does it portend for cyber war in the future? Also, the imminent threat we're hearing about in Germany and perhaps elsewhere. All of that with James Carafano and much, much more in segment three. And then finally, segment four, our cleanup batter, Sarah Carter from the Washington Examiner. Her beat is national security for that publication. I'll be asking her about the latest on the gays in the military issue, the Afghan president's decision that he wants to stop our forces from conducting night raids. What will that mean? Also, reports that we're relying upon some pretty unsavory people to fight the Taliban. Is that a good idea? Is it necessary? And we will also probably be taking stock with Sarah from her perspective in the Pentagon on the new START treaty and what's going on with all of that. So much to talk about, and we'll get into it momentarily. But an update from me on the new START treaty that I mentioned a moment ago. As we've been discussing here, this is a highly dynamic situation. We heard earlier this week Senator John Kyle telling the Obama administration that, of course, Senator Harry Reid, the majority leader of the Senate, there just wasn't time in this truncated lame duck session to do the kind of due diligence that the United States Senate is expected to do under the Constitution of the United States when it comes to treaties. It is constitutionally charged with being a quality control agent. Senator Kyle quite properly said, can't be done in this limited time. The administration has essentially decided in subsequent days to double down, to intensify the effort to ram this treaty through the Senate without regard for the kinds of concerns Senator Kyle has expressed, either about the substance of the treaty or about the larger series of questions that he has rightly been raising about whether the United States, under the Obama administration, intends to preserve the kind of national capabilities to both maintain, manufacture, and if necessary, modernize our nuclear forces. He has been struggling for months with the administration on this question. This is against, of course, the backdrop that the president actually wants to get rid of nuclear weapons, ostensibly everybody's, but starting with ours. So this has been a thorny problem. Senator Kyle has extracted some commitments from the administration to invest in some aspects of this weapons complex, as they call it, that supports the nuclear deterrent, but not nearly enough, and not sincere enough, I think it's fair to say, when it comes to the reliability of these commitments, given this president's determination that really we don't need nuclear weapons, we're going to get rid of them all. So why make these tens of billions of dollars worth of investments? And indeed, I think it's been palpable as we have seen the president and his minions say, well, if the treaty isn't ratified in the lame duck session, all bets are off. We may not be able to maintain what they call the fragile consensus behind putting money into our nuclear deterrent and its maintenance. Well, I got to tell you, folks, that tells you just about everything you need to know about this administration and its attitude towards the future safety, security, and effectiveness of the deterrent. There's also, of course, the Russians that are playing games. We're being told maybe they won't ratify the treaty either. We're being told that they're increasing the number of routes into Afghanistan that we can, well, become increasingly dependent upon to maintain the war effort there, such that at some future point they can certainly shut them down. This is going to be all, I'm sure, in discussion this weekend when the president goes to Lisbon for a NATO summit. But the point is that the United States Senate has this constitutional responsibility to weigh all of these things, to evaluate them carefully. And Senator Kyle is absolutely right. This can't be done on a slam-bam, thank-you-ma'am kind of basis, which is precisely what the Obama administration hopes to do. Now, we're hearing from its spokesman that, well, all this work has been done on the treaty. We've had 18 hearings. This Senate knows all about it. This Senate has to vote on it. I say rubbish. The 18 hearings were a travesty. They were essentially a completely rigged game. Out of the 22, I believe it was, witnesses, only four had a critical word to say about the treaty. All of the rest were there to sing its praises. And the fact of the matter is, this treaty does have problems. Maybe they're as bad as some of us think. Maybe they're less bad. But nobody who's being honest about this, not former secretaries of state, not former secretaries of defense, not former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or strategic command commanders or any of the other eminences that the administration is now trotting out in the hopes that the senators will defer to their judgment, to their opinion, rather than do their own homework. None of those guys, if they're honest about this, can possibly say this is a treaty without significant deficiencies in the verification area, in terms of the at least implicit veto that it confers on Moscow over our missile defenses, the extent to which our conventional forces are going to be impinged upon by the explicit terms of the treaty, specifically our prompt global strike capabilities. All of these are real problems. And papering them over with letters from various former thises and former thats doesn't alter the fact that these are the sorts of things that demand close, careful scrutiny. Now, there's one other development that just happened today that I want you to be aware of. The newly elected members of the Senate, the vast majority of them, Republican ranks, have said in a letter to Harry Reid, don't take this treaty up in the lame duck session. We were elected to carry out responsibilities like those that would determine whether a treaty like this, which will be implemented on our watch, not on the watch of these outgoing senators, but on our watch. We want to have a vote on it. We want to have a say on it. Don't give this thing, in my words, the bum's rush. I couldn't agree with those new senators more, with Senator Kyle and with others who have expressed real concern about it. I hope they will hold the line and that this treaty will, in fact, be subjected to the kind of close scrutiny and rigorous debate it must have next year. So my thoughts, I'd welcome yours, securefreedomradio.com or the Frank Affney or Twitter, Facebook accounts. Next up, we'll have Claudia Rosette with a take on the United Nations and much, much more. Straight ahead.
Do you want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Hi, this is Frank Affney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. We are proud to have joined this superb, intelligent talk lineup at WRC 1260 AM. Join us every weeknight from 9 to 10 p.m. for your personal, daily, national security brief by the very best in the business. That's Secure Freedom Radio, now from 9 to 10 weeknights at WRC 1260 AM. Far and away, the most intelligent talk in Washington, D.C.
Her boyfriend. You were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Okay. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by the absolutely superb investigative reporter, Claudia Rosette, who has been an incredible contributor on national security sensitive matters for decades in various incarnations, including as a reporter and editorial writer for the Wall Street Journal. She has contributed to any number of other publications. She now blogs for Pajamas Media and Forbes.com has given her a column. And we are very pleased that she is periodically with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. She is also the journalist in residence with our friends at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. And Claudia, it is always great to have you, but particularly when there is so much going on that has particular relevance to your favorite beat, I guess, that of the United Nations. So welcome back. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Frank. Glad to be here.
Tell us about this idea that President Obama unveiled with much fanfare in India, much to the delight of his hosts, that he thinks it's time to bring the Indians into the UN Security Council. How do you see that idea? What are the implications of it for the Council and perhaps for us as well?
Well, two-part reaction. First, it is good to see President Obama actually trying to do something good for an ally. Okay?
As opposed to just punishing them.
As opposed to sending back the bust of Winston Churchill and pulling the carpet out from under the Czechs and the Poles, as opposed to, exactly. So it was good that he was trying. On the other hand, second part of the thought, it was a terrible suggestion. You know, the real question here is India good enough for the Security Council, which was the message he was trying to send. You know, this is never going to happen anytime soon. It's just too big a can of worms. But the real question is...
But let me ask you, is it advisable?
Good enough? Yeah.
Even if it were achievable now, presumably it's not just the Indians you bring in. If you're expanding the Security Council, you're bringing a bunch of other people in. Is it, you have been as harsh, yes, but accurate a critic as anybody of the United Nations. Would it benefit those of us who hope that there might be some redeeming value to the United Nations to have a larger number of particularly non-aligned members of this council with veto-wielding power?
Not really. No. The question isn't, is India good enough by now, you know, for the Security Council? The question is the Security Council good enough for India? You know, the problem is that the Security Council is very often at best impotent and at worst, you know, meddlesome in ways that really don't help, that pretend to help and don't. Sanctions resolutions that don't really do anything, that kind of thing. And for that, my reaction, Frank, is what President Obama really ought to be doing is looking for ways to constitute groups of what some call like-minded countries outside the UN. In other words, if you really wanted to do something, both for America's interests first and for India as a Democrat, an enormous democratic ally, the right way to go would have been, let's form something else. Forget the UN Security Council.
Yeah. An alliance of democracies, for example, that would include the Indians and others who are not currently in NATO or other such organizations. Claudia, let me segue, if I could. You have written, a superb piece in your, I think it's your most recent column at Forbes.com, about the deepening mysteries of UN financial disclosure, which again goes to the heart of this question as to, is there any redeeming value in this institution? Tell us what you're finding out now. You having, of course, broken the story of the oil for food scandal some time ago and followed closely corruption and the like at the UN, what are you on to now?
Okay, Frank, this is beyond Kafka, which is not unusual at the UN.
They live beyond Kafka.
Yes, exactly. In 2006, as Kofi Annan, former Secretary General, tried to wipe the sludge of oil for food from his Brioni suits before he left, he was part of bringing in this series of reforms, and one was supposed to bring greater transparency, and he promised that UN senior officials would start disclosing their personal finances. Okay? Now, when we say disclose, you know, we tend to, in America, we like to think of that as telling the public, right? Which is what congressional representatives are required to do. You know, when Representative Rangel was convicted by a House panel of ethics violations, they looked at what he was required to disclose and said, you didn't do this properly. Well, at the UN, it turned out that disclosure meant they weren't required to disclose anything to the public at all. They are required to disclose to a contracted third party in-house, with results kept secret even from other UN staffers. So there's really no backup. And they can then choose whether to disclose to the public. Okay? So what you get is Secretary General Ban Ki-moon proudly has on his website a section called Ethical Standards and under it a section called public disclosure, which includes things like a one-page form where senior officials, high-ranking officials, can check a box that says they choose not to disclose anything. That's even considered sort of disclosure because they can also just choose not to even fill out the form. But I cruise the site periodically, Frank, because it's always interesting to see what's on it.
Or what's not on it, as the case may be.
What's not on it, right, exactly. They could also disclose assets, but they do this in a way that would, for instance, it constitutes disclosure at the UN to disclose a house. There's no dollar value attached to these things. It's just incredibly generic. Okay, well, I was doing this last weekend and noticed that the Russian, who for the last 8 years has run the palatial UN spread in Geneva and whose only disclosure on his form previously had been bank savings accounts, has now changed even that to nil. Okay, under every category he lists nil, which is, you know, a number of them do. And my question is, okay, is that this is disclosure. Could Congress please see if they can find out more?
Yeah, this sounds like a good job for the new management in the United States House of Representatives. Claudia, let me again segue just to another part of this portfolio, really, I guess. The Israelis have been induced. I just can't imagine what they're thinking, but they have been prevailed upon, presumably most especially by the United States, but I guess the quartet or the United Nations or whomever else, to withdraw yet again from another piece of real estate, this time a fairly small piece on the border with Lebanon, the town of Gajar, that is now partly in Lebanon and partly in Israel. They're supposed to relinquish the part that is in Lebanon and abandon the people who live there, who they had conferred Israeli citizenship on. The idea, as I understand it, Claudia, is that they will turn these folks, their future safety, and the exclusion of Hezbollah, which has shown itself pretty adept at filling these kinds of vacuums, over to the United Nations peacekeeping force in Lebanon. What, in a minute or so, would you make of this idea, and what would you advise the people of Israel and, for that matter, that town of Gajar?
Well, from what we have seen in the past, I would advise the people of that town to get out, and I would advise Israel to help them do it, because Israel did this on a big scale in 2000 with great fanfare. They pulled out of southern Lebanon, and the UN said, don't worry, we'll keep the peace, and, of course, they had no peace. In 2006, it flared into war that went on for weeks that summer, and it's heading for another one, Frank, as Hezbollah rearms. And, you know, as far as wanting the UN to stop declaring Israel free of border violations, dream on. The way that the UN operates is they treat all of Israel as one gigantic border violation. And that's not going to stop until, you know, the way that too many of the players at the United Nations think of the Organization of the Islamic Conference, you know, the Iranian membership,
right,
and that's created.
You know, a very dubious organization. Claudia, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it with that closing thought on the Organization of the Islamic Conference. We'll be back to talk with you more about that because you're following it closely and you know how bad a problem that is. But thank you so much for joining us in this quick tour of the UN beat. As always, nobody does it better than you. Claudia Rosette, come again soon. Next up, we'll be talking with James Carafano about the mystery missile, New Start, and homeland insecurity. Straight ahead.
Download podcasts, hear clips, read the bios of the amazing people Frank Gaffney interviews, all at securefreedomradio.org. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Steven and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Steven a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Affney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. We are proud to have joined the superb, intelligent talk lineup at WRC 1260 AM. Join us every weeknight from 9 to 10 p.m. for your personal, daily, national security brief by the very best in the business. That's Secure Freedom Radio, now from 9 to 10 weeknights at WRC 1260 AM. Far and away, the most intelligent talk in Washington, D.C.
Charles the Carpet King will carpet your entire house for only $39. That's right, your entire house for only $39. But don't expect Charles the Carpet King to do it himself, because Charles the Carpet King passed away last week at 47 from the same disease that got his father, so he won't be around for his family. And sadly, it could have been detected early with a simple test, but Charles didn't get it.
Have you gotten the medical test you need? For a list of tests every man should have, go to AHRQ.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
Welcome back. We're joined by James Carafano, one of the country's true national security authorities, currently situated at the Heritage Foundation, where he directs its highly esteemed Douglas and Sarah Allison Center for Foreign Policy Studies. Jim brings an impressive background in the United States military and in the private sector. He has been writing copiously. He is frequently tasked with commenting on national security matters and homeland security matters in the various media outlets of our country. And he is one of the stars, I think it's fair to say, of the terrific film that Heritage produced a while back on missile defense, entitled 33 Minutes Protecting America in the New Missile Age. And James, it's great to have you with us as always. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's good to be with you.
Let's start with the missile age. There is this natty problem, or at least lingering uncertainty, about what was a so-called mystery missile
some believe might have been a ballistic missile launched off the coast of the United States. Others have said, no, it's just an airplane contrails captured in an odd way on film. As one of the country's experts on these matters, what is your take on this missile that we keep hearing about?
Just three quick points. One is, I think we have to believe the government on this when they say it's nothing, because if it wasn't nothing, that would get found out eventually, and they would lose so much credibility, it would be completely devastating. You know, somebody that could do this, like China, that would be an incredibly provocative act for them, almost one akin to something that might accidentally start a war. So I don't think the Chinese are that brazen. They're bad, but I don't think that brazen. But here's the real message, which is, it took the government 2 days to tell us that it was nothing. You know, we've talked about this threat before. You can put a Scud missile on a ship. You can sail it within sight of America. You can fire a weapon at the United States. You can take out a city. You could take out all the electricity in the country with an EMP blast. We're vulnerable to that threat. This scare reminds us of that, even though if this is nothing, this is a big red light saying you should be able to defend yourself against these kind of threats.
Yeah, but point taken. And I think that's exactly the right, you know, lesson to be learned from all of this. But James, let me just ask you this. I was in the Pentagon a light year ago, but at that time, we would have known within seconds, certainly minutes, of the launch of a missile. If that infrared signature were not present, presumably the United States government would have been able to say, on the basis of that, the absence of that indicator, very quickly, that whatever it wasn't a missile. And yet, as you say, it took days. Why would that be the case, in your estimation? Do you have a speculation?
I think that's a shocking observation that it takes the government 2 days to tell us that it's nothing. You know, I think this should be one of the first things up on the block when the Armed Services Committee come back is, you know, somebody should come in and say, you know, time out here, you know, I can't believe that it takes you 2 days to tell us that you know what's going on in the airspace around America. It really should get Americans really kind of nervous. All at a time when you see people the next day turn around and say, oh yeah, let's just swap $100 billion here, $200 billion there a year off the defense budget. We don't really need that. When we've got threats like this, when we're completely vulnerable to, all people can talk about is let's cut missile defense, let's cut defense, because we don't want to cut all the social programs and welfare programs that we love so dearly.
Yeah. James, we're talking with James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation. Let's go another step on that very topic. If it had, in fact, been a missile, in your estimation, particularly one with a relatively short range, you know, flight trajectory, and the purpose being to put a nuclear weapon in space to detonate, just as you say, an electromagnetic pulse strategic attack on this country, would we today have been able to shoot it down?
They couldn't even, it took them 2 days to tell you that something didn't happen. Yeah. We did the film 33 minutes. 33 minutes is the maximum time from almost anywhere in the world it takes a missile to get here. If you're talking about something firing off the coast of the United States, you're talking about a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
But the space between commercial breaks on a TV show. So,
right.
You know, we're toast.
Right.
And we're ambivalent to it, and yet they want to cut the defense budget.
Well, and let's segue to another topic. I mentioned it at the top of the show in my monologue. You follow very closely the strategic arms issues there at the Heritage Foundation, James Carafano. One of the things that is happening, as you know, is an intensifying controversy over whether to take this new START treaty, so-called, up during the lame duck session. The administration is determined to ram it through. From the perspective that you've just suggested, we have inadequate missile defenses today. Is there reason to be concerned about the implications of this START treaty for our future missile defense options? And is that, in your estimation, a reason why the Senate should take its time on this deliberation about whether to ratify or not?
No, you bet. I mean, you can go to our website, you know, heritage.org. One of the papers on there is it's five direct problems that this treaty poses for missile defense. One of them is, you know, under some scenarios, we might have to actually turn missile defense telemetry data over to the Russians, who could then turn around and give it to the Chinese, or the Iranians, and they can just figure out how to defeat our missile defense system. It's nuts. But here's, this is the real message for me. It's the incredible arrogance of this administration. They don't know there was an election. So there's an election when Americans say, we don't like you just ramming stuff down our neck. And then the next day we have Senator Kerry come out and say, well, nobody in the Senate really objects to this. The same day Senator Voinovich gives a speech, an impassioned speech on the floor saying, look, I've got problems with this treaty. You have an administration say, well, we're just going to ram this through anyway. So you have a lot of people not even saying we're going to vote against the treaty, but saying, look, we've got real questions we want answered to. And the administration saying, no, they don't. We don't care. We know best.
Yeah. And specifically on this question, in your professional judgment, James Carafano, when the Russians say, we have a clear understanding with the United States that if you improve quantitatively or qualitatively your missile defenses, we're out of this treaty. Is that the kind of thing that the negotiating record ought to be carefully scrutinized by the Senate before they take up this treaty? And is that in prospect, certainly in the next couple of weeks?
Well, you bet. And for you folks who are not familiar with that, the negotiating record is all the notes that we're taking, the official notes taken during the negotiations between two sides, which said, in which people would say, this is what we think this means. And we know for an absolute fact, one, that the Senate's entitled to look at that record, two, that senators have not been given full access to that record, and three, even the senators in the Foreign Service Committee who were given access admit that they were not given complete access to the full record.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very legitimate concern.
Yeah. In fact, as I understand it, they were given a 7-page classified summary of some of the negotiating records.
Right.
So it's grossly inadequate. You're absolutely right, James Carafano. Let me segue to another part of your expertise and portfolio. Jim, you have been working hard on homeland security for a long time. I'd like to ask you to stitch together a couple of things in the remaining couple of minutes we have. Germany is saying that they are under imminent threat of attack, which suggests that as elsewhere, perhaps including here, there are now Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda-like terrorist teams in the field poised to engage maybe in another kind of Mumbai-style mayhem inflicting attack. We're having the American people recoil in horror at these body scanners now in place at our nation's airports. And, you know, is that excessive intrusiveness given this potential threat? And finally, and this is a little bit of a stretch, but the broader rubric, we've been getting from the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission, a congressionally mandated panel, as you know, Larry Wurzel, an old colleague of yours at Heritage, is a member of it, the finding that China made off with the world's internet traffic for 18 minutes a couple of months back. What are the implications of that from a homeland security and, for that matter, national security perspective as well? All of that in 2 minutes, Jim.
That's some laundry list. Okay. I'm not even sure I can remember them all. Okay,
lightning round.
Let's start with Germany. Okay, the message there is that the people that want to cut and run in Afghanistan, this is why they are basically cowards. Look, this plot was hatched in Afghanistan and Pakistan. If we didn't have boots on the ground, we would have never uncovered it. We would have never been able to take out leaders. So if you don't win on Al-Qaeda Central, stuff like this is going to happen all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, for people that want to cut and run, they're just flat wrong. You know, on the TSA thing, Secretary Napolitano is just flat wrong here. You know, we developed the body scanners and deployed them because when you had somebody who was suspicious and you think maybe they were hiding something on their person, the only way you can really tell is to do a very intrusive pat down. So what the body scanners were good for is after people go through primary security, you know, when you walk through the magnetometer or whatever, you know, if you weren't suspicious and they didn't want to have a pat down, they could go through the body scanner. Now, because we had all this stimulus money, and this is that's the fact, because we had all this stimulus money, we bought all these scanners, and we're using them for primary screening. And for whatever reason, people are opting out, and they're having to go through this very intrusive pat-down. So the irony here is we've dramatically increased the number of pat-downs, and we've inconvenienced passengers, and we're not really gaining that much more security. You can't carry a bomb on your body on a plane that's big enough to take the plane down. So I think this is one where they got it wrong. And just on the China thing, very quickly.
We're out of time for the China thing. Jim, will you come back and cover that with us? Because this is,
yeah,
this is another
exactly.
very important story, and we deserve to give it, or it deserves to get better treatment than I can give you in the remaining time. Thank you so much, James Carafano of the Heritage Foundation, for joining us. Thank you for the great work you do there. And please, as I say, come back soon on China and so much more. You're an invaluable resource.
Failed the lightning round.
Yeah, there you go. You did well for your part of it, that's for sure. Sarah Carter is up next. We'll talk with her a little bit about China and also gays in the military. What's up with that? Straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org. Ever vigilant. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said, "Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values." To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. We are proud to have joined the superb, intelligent talk lineup at WRC 1260 AM. Join us every weeknight from 9 to 10 p.m. for your personal daily national security brief by the very best in the business. That's Secure Freedom Radio, now from 9 to 10 weeknights at WRC 1260 AM. Far and away, the most intelligent talk in Washington, D.C.
Hey, Charlie, what gives?
Hey, did you see that play last night?
Oh, unbelievable. What do they feed that guy?
Yeah, but they still lost.
Yeah, I know.
You know, when I was playing, what we tried to
you,
do with
it... You played on Biltmore Street.
Hey, come on. I play in the service.
Oh, right.
Anyhow, what I'm trying to say is the kid,
he should have fallen down. Hey, you okay? Stop joking around. Oh, no.
Someone call 911!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke, and many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk, but it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined now by Sarah Carter, our resident expert on things in the Pentagon and viewed from the Pentagon, what's going on more broadly with national security and foreign policy. Sarah Carter is, of course, the ace national security correspondent for the Washington Examiner and a regular guest of ours here at Secure Freedom Radio. Sarah, as always, it's terrific to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Frank. It's great to be on.
Let's start with this story that you have been covering intensively, including through several extended embeds in country, namely the continuing drama with Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, and his efforts, it seems, to, well, lose the war there against the Taliban. And most recently, he's now come up on the net saying that he doesn't want U.S. forces and allied forces conducting night missions. What would the implications of that be? What are your sources in country telling you are their concerns about where Hamid Karzai is going?
There's an enormous amount of frustration, both on with some Afghan sources that I've been speaking with and on the majority, of course, with the troops and commanders that I've been talking with. I mean, look, Karzai is playing a double game here, and everyone says that I've spoken to, he's going to end up getting bit in the end. But he's going to get bit, but he's going to run off with a lot of money of U.S. taxpayers' dollars.
And Iranian, apparently.
And Iranian funding, yes, as well. And, you know, I mean, and there's an issue there, too. I mean, we know, and I have reported on this and talked to commanders about Iran aid to the Taliban, both in training and with weapons. So this is a very, very dangerous game. And the fact that Hamid Karzai wants to stop special forces operations at night is just unbelievable. Because in all reality, casualties, especially civilian casualties, are greatly reduced during night missions. You know, I've been there, Frank. I've seen it. And also, it's the only way. It's we own the night. That's what the guys say. Look, we own the night. We get out there. We find these bad guys. We haul them in. We confront them out on their own turf. And we need that accessibility. Now
let's just focus on that for 1 second, Sarah, because again, you have been there with the troops performing these missions, if not actually conducting them with them, but certainly talking with them about them. We own the night partly because of the advantages we have in terms of technology, obviously, but we also have this incredibly skilled force of particularly the special operators who are trained to do these sorts of missions. And if we were to deny ourselves these kinds of capabilities, what, in the estimation, again, of the folks you're interacting with on the ground doing the job, would the implications of that be?
It would set us back tremendously. Look, we're already back. We're not where we should be. The Taliban's already resurged. In fact, Karzai and even folks in our own administration have given them legitimacy by saying, okay, we're going to, allow Karzai to try to work some kind of peace negotiations with Taliban leaders. Petraeus admitted himself, General Petraeus, the commander in Afghanistan, admitted that, you know, NATO has aided Taliban leaders in their movements through Afghanistan to Kabul to meet with Karzai. I mean, for a lot of our troops who are out there and for commanders out on the battlefield, these are the people who are out there risking their lives. This is like a slap in the face. The Taliban is the enemy, and it's very difficult, you know, to explain to people who haven't been there how the sentiment of these Taliban leaders, how they feel about Americans and the West. And what's happening there? So this is very
Sarah.
Very
I just want to capture this point. You have in the article that you wrote, I think back on the 15th for the Washington Examiner. Again, we're talking with Sarah Carter, their national security correspondent. This striking quote by an Afghan official, not named, but obviously you know who the source was, and you say, quote, "The Taliban wants to stop the U.S. operations at night because they are getting hit hard. So Karzai is playing all sides. It's a dangerous game." Unfortunately, Sarah Carter, it's not a game. This is a war. And as you have documented so well, we're taking casualties. We're trying to deal with rules of engagement that are exposing our forces. And now this would be disarming us in a really
exactly.
material way.
It would be. And, you know, this Afghan official he's talking about the game that Karzai's playing. And in a way, for Karzai, this is a game, and that's unfortunate. This is a war, and when you're in a situation and when you travel the way I have and other reporters and troops on the ground and people working for the United Nations or working in nonprofit groups or on the ground in Afghanistan, in the middle of the war zone, trying to get their job done, trying to work, and you know how devastating this is, you know, the bombs, the pressure plates, the loss of life, the loss of limb, and children and innocent people, this is a war. You're absolutely right. And it's one that unfortunately, I mean, and this is coming from the mouths of our troops, that they feel they're being toyed with. It's like, I'm here because I believe in it. I believe in this fight against Al-Qaeda. I believe in this fight against the Taliban. We don't want another safe haven in Afghanistan. But here we are with our hands tied behind our backs. We can't do our job. Everyone's lying at the top. The lies are being promoted through the media because they have the power and we don't.
No.
And
you know, when you say lies, just very quickly on that, Sarah Carter, when you say lies are being expressed at the top of what? At the top of the United
from
States
the Pentagon,
government as well as the
yes.
Afghan government? Wow.
Yes. And that from the top of the United States government to the top of the Afghan government. Look, are the Afghan forces going to be ready? Remember how they talked about, oh, Afghan forces are going to be, security forces will be ready by 2011. I told you I saw it with my own eyes. They're not ready. Now it's 2014. We're going to draw down. It's a mess over there.
Yeah.
I mean, the Afghan forces have really a long ways to go.
Yeah, no, this is a very important assessment, and I appreciate so much you providing it to us each week. And let me just segue quickly in the remaining 2 minutes or so we have with you, Sarah Carter. Gaze in the military, the administration, as we've been talking about earlier in the show, it seems to be determined to double down on the START treaty. They are also doubling down on the idea of repealing the law that prohibits gaze in the military. Senator Levin, the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, says he's going to have hearings in the first couple of days of December to try to sense what the Pentagon's new study is telling him about the advisability of, or at least the workability of repealing this law. What are you hearing from your folks, and what should we expect?
Well, I'm pretty much hearing the same thing, and I was out last night speaking to folks at the American Legion, and this was definitely a topic of conversation that came up during the dinner, and there's a lot of concern, but they believe that this is going to be pushed through hard. Whether or not there's success in that, we don't know yet. I mean, it's just a guessing game. And remember, you know, there's a lot of surveys coming out there. There's a lot of people behind this. There's this sea change, you know, that's underway. And a lot of this is promotion, and a lot of this is, you know, special interest groups trying to get their way. And like you said, you know, the U.S. Senate, I mean, you know, Chief Reed, he's seeking this repeal. So I mean, what happens from here on out is going to be, I believe, as you assessed just a moment ago, it's going to be a push through, and there's a lot of concern in the military about this.
Yeah, Sarah, let me just wrap up by saying we're looking at I believe a mortal threat to the all volunteer force in this, and the kind of pressure that we've seen, the kind of antics, as you say, that we've been witnessing here, is just a small foretaste of what will happen to the military if this is repealed and the radical homosexuals have their way in what they call a zero-tolerance implementation of this new law. And this is a hugely important topic. We'll be covering it further with your good help. That's it for this installment of Secure Freedom Radio. Please tune in tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
Been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.